Well, Sesame Street was a place that I could go and take the same positive message about Native American people to 72 countries of the world 3 times a day. They never stereotyped me. We did things about Native American culture. We also did things on breastfeeding, on sibling rivalry, on raising
kids.
You had
your son Cody on.
Yes, my son Cody was on, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a big grown-up guy now.
So what do you hope to be doing now as you go on this tour, the message you're spreading? You were fighting the Vietnam War. You were blacklisted. We're now in the midst of, well, I don't know if we can count the number of wars we're involved with in the Middle East.
Yeah. I really am on a campaign to appreciate the good things that we have going on right now, which is really being awake. I have been to the Alberta tar sands where fracking, you know, it's fracking central. I've seen it. It's much worse than I could have imagined. In Hawaii. GMO is everywhere. They're spreading pesticides, spraying them all over us, and it's very, very serious. So thank you, people, for being awake. Please stay positive. Please put down violence. Step up. Learn alternative conflict resolution.
Buffy St. Marie, thanks so much for being with us. Canadian First Nations singer, songwriter, and activist. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Happy birthday to Mike DiFilippo. Thanks so much.
All right. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up after these messages, it will be Positively Revolting with guest host Lisa Loving.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Shake the Dust, May 23rd and 24th at the Clinton Street Theater. Executive producer and rapper Nasir Jones takes a fascinating look at how hip-hop and the acrobatic breakdancing culture strike a resonant chord in the slums, favelas, and ghettos of the world, inspiring young people everywhere to enact social change. In Shake the Dust, B-boys and B-girls hone their gravity-defying breakdancing techniques in virtually every country on the planet, filmed in Colombia, Cambodia, Uganda, Yemen, and beyond. Again, that's Shake the Dust, May 23rd and 24th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hey KBOO listeners, this is Stella from the Youth Collective reminding you to tune in Wednesday, May 27th from 6 to 7 p.m. for our public affairs show. We have a whole collection of interesting pieces on politics this month ready for your ears. We'll talk about recent events in Baltimore, explore the history of politically fueled music, and share our opinions on corruption. It's a show you will not want to miss. So sit back, turn up the volume, and turn into KBOO 90.7 FM, Wednesday, May 27th from 6 to 7 p.m. for your slice of current events on the underground.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
It's 8:03 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. Sitting in for Ani and Lynn, I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, does it seem like your neighborhood is getting torn apart all around you? Our guest is Sarah Long of the social media group Stop Demolishing Portland and More, right?
Yes.
This group of people, ad hoc citizens, agitate against the current building construction infill boom while documenting unsafe conditions for workers and neighbors. Is that a fair way of saying it? You guys are doing amazing stuff.
Oh, thank you so much.
I would hesitate to say that we're against infill. We are actually very pro-infill. What we are against is the destruction of existing housing to be replaced with newer structures. I grew up in construction, and I believe me, I know that you cannot make new construction affordable. That means we need to hold on to the old and build where there is actually nothing at all. And believe me, in my neighborhood, Old Albina, the historic Black neighborhood of Portland, rapidly gentrifying, we have so many empty lots that people could build on, yet because of unfortunate incentives, the builders would rather take a healthy house, tear it down, and build where it was.
You know, there's something about what's going on, and it's even if you don't care about whether you're breathing lead or asbestos, chances are you do care about that. But even if you don't, what gets me is that the whole face of the neighborhood, look at what I just did there, the whole face of the neighborhood is changing. First the people changed, and now the buildings are changing. And I just want to really quickly for our listeners, I know there are people listening right now that don't have access to social media, and you're maybe going to get kind of frustrated here, but we're going to try to also figure out ways that you can begin to understand how you might have an impact on the system, even if you're not a digitized person or a wired person, because this is just old-fashioned grassroots community organizing, and there's a seat at this table for everyone. But I just, you know, as an information source, Stop Demolishing Portland, which is a public group on Facebook. I don't want to throw people towards Facebook. I don't want to, you know, always encourage people to go there. I do want to say this is an incredibly dynamic community of people. And I just want to read just the headlines of the past few postings there, right? Yesterday, Amber Leonard, she shared the Community Alliance of Tenants post about inclusionary zoning, people trying to overturn Oregon's ban on inclusionary zoning. This is huge. This is a policy issue. And we could talk with Sarah about that in a minute. Another person has posted about the Portland plan. You know, has anyone read all of the Portland plan about density and infill? Again, going back to these policy issues, which is so boring, but it's the root of everything. And then I've been watching this one. Some of these houses, the developers pull down the old house, they throw up a new house. And I feel like just, it was like a week or two ago that these new infill houses started going for more than $1 million. I felt like that was a turning point somehow, because we saw some of these houses, you know, it's one thing with a house is $400,000, but then, you know, the $1 million house is mind-boggling. And this one Grant Park house really did sell. I think it sold. People are looking at this one house that people have monitored, and they're just, their mind is boggled that this house was for sale for $1,095,000 at the Dolph Park neighborhood. It's kind of like watching Hollywood sprout up down the block. So Sarah, what are the biggest issues we're looking at here?
So the biggest issues by far are the impacts on people, the gentrification and displacement of poor Portlanders. They are mostly being completely pushed out of Portland. I am facing that myself. I live in a house that is going to be demolished by a developer. There was no law requiring that he offer it to me for sale. There was no law requiring that he even inform me that this house was going to be demolished. It had been a rental for 32 years when I moved in, and so I had every reason to expect that I would be able to raise my very young children somewhere for a few years while being a good tenant and not having to worry about these things. And very unexpectedly, I landed right in the middle of this mess. I started out, you know, we lived in an apartment, and my 3-year-old, he has some sensitivity issues, kind of autism spectrum things. And so I really needed to, he insisted on going outside all the time. And when he did go outside on our little tiny patio, he would throw things off of it to 3 stories below. And so I finally said, okay, I've got to get a house. I've got to get a yard for him so he stops going crazy. I know some families can live without a yard, and that's wonderful. I wish we could. So I had to go looking for a yard as quickly as I could. And there was a listing for an open house, and I quickly ran down the street to it because it was about a half a mile away. And
walked in and took just this look around the inside of the house, look around the backyard, and said, I'll take it. Because that, I knew even at that time that the rental market was extremely intense. And so I was just ready to jump on it. And of course, then I came to find out that there was a lot of bad factors. There was, for one...
After you moved in?
Yes. After I had already signed the agreement and put my money up, I discovered that, for one, it was run by Fox Management. And as most activists know right now, Fox Management is among the worst. We simply do not have enough protections for tenants. So they are very abusive. And I did post a lengthy story with some photos of some very, very obvious chipped lead-based paint at a community on Facebook called Attention, ATTN, Don't Rent from Fox. And so I did post a lengthy story there with photos. So if you
But we're talking about even if you get the rental, even if you get there, it's still an unstable platform. So you scrape together this money. It's hard enough to find the affordable rental. I know a number of people right now that are facing, you know, they're wondering, should they, you know, their lease is coming up. Should they find someplace else? And I'm looking at them and saying, if you want to live in a different town, sure, great. And some people do at this point. Some people do want to live in a different town. But so you got together, you have to kind of put a lot of money together for these corporate people that are impacting the management and the development.
Yes.
And then you have to sign on the dotted line with all of their rules. And of course, if they mess with you, you don't have the right to find them, right?
Correct.
So you're ensconced in there. There's asbestos and all this stuff, and they're going to tear it down.
Exactly. And, you know, having grown up in, I grew up with an exceptional fear of fires. So I actually, there's different kinds of asbestos. This is my construction, my working class construction growing up background coming out. I have asbestos panels along the base of my house, and I'm actually perfectly happy with that because those are not friable. You can't crush
them. They're not crumbly, so
they're not crumbly, so they won't get in your lungs. But during a demolition, when something's being torn apart, it can happen. And that's why the current state of demolitions is very dangerous. The fluffy stuff, you know, that's probably sealed up in the walls somewhere. So as long as I'm at less risk of fire, if my family's at less risk of fire, I'm perfectly happy.
But so we are, though, we're talking about Stop Demolishing Portland. We're talking about all the ways that the rental market for housing, the affordable housing market, even, you know what, even if you're not a low-income person, we're seeing people who have resources and have money, and they're watching the building next to them get torn down, and then that building, this has happened at least twice that I know of, destruction crews are coming and tearing apart what they consider to be, I mean, some of these buildings are made out of old growth timber, by the way, but they're tearing buildings down and half of the wall of the building falls into the electrical wires, right?
Yes.
We've got photographic evidence of that happening at least two times just in the past couple weeks.
Exactly.
So where I work at the newspaper that I work for just one more week, my coworker did a story about where do you call if you have a complaint about the construction or the destruction? And the answer is there is no single place. You have to call 12 places. If there's lead, there's no real clear cut, complaint process if there's, for example, lead in the air. When this beautiful church, this white painted church that was 111 years old, mm-hmm. Was torn down in the King neighborhood, there was no amelioration for the dust in the air. And so you can be low income or you could be high income. You're just going to be affected by that. And it's not even clear what you can possibly do because, Sarah, who really regulates this stuff?
Well, I'll tell you who's supposed to regulate it. It's DEQ. And there's a guy named Killian Condon. He will respond to your email because he's one of two inspectors in the entire state, and he covers every county from here over to the ocean. And some other guy covers all of the rest of the state. And they never come out and inspect because they can't. They're underfunded. Mm-hmm. There's not enough requirement to do so. One of the most mind-bending things that we've run across is that there is no survey required for asbestos in a single-family home. But if you know that asbestos is there, then you have to abate it.
It's like, it's, I almost said something really negative. You're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Lisa. I'm sitting in for Positively Revolting Talk Radio for the next couple weeks while Ani and Lynn take a break. And our guest this morning is Sarah Long, among other people, a grassroots community activist looking at issues of what's happening with all the developers tearing buildings down, vomiting up million-dollar houses, starter castles, and where are people being pushed? What are you breathing? Who's supposed to be paying attention? Listeners, if you're impacted by the development and the gentrification, we'd like to hear your story. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And Sarah, you already sort of touched on the fact that when we're talking about, you know, this issue has like four or five heads. It does. You know, people of all races, people of all incomes are looking at what's happening, and we're shocked, and we don't want to see it happen like that. And some of the buildings coming up, I'll say, I like some of the buildings that are going up. I just want to make sure that it just, to me, it seems like, as someone said to me, this looks like a blueprint for a slum. 50 years from now, what is Williams Avenue going to look like? Again, you know, if 50 years from now, 100 years from now, I'm interested in that, because you can see the buildings going up. They're all made out of particle board. That's just what it looks like to me.
In the rain, might we
add. In the rain. Sarah, what's your background? You just talked about how you come from construction. You really have done a lot of detailed policy research that you're sharing on the social media site. It is really almost encyclopedic. You're basically an investigative citizen journalist. What's your background?
Well, I've become obsessed with this issue. I get obsessed with things when there's something wrong. I have kind of an engineering brain, and I just glom onto it until I can't let it go. And I cannot let this go until we make some change. This is a horrible, horrible situation. When I try to pull back from it and look at it, it's just beyond awful. I moved to Portland with my family when I was 8 years old, and we have lived in different parts of the state. We didn't visit downtown because we were, I don't know, we lived like in Gresham, we lived in Newburgh at one point. So
you're working class people.
Very, very much so. My dad wore overalls and coveralls, and Carhartts were like fancy for us, you know, whereas most people will put down Carhartts. But anyway, and always boots. And he's a working man, still gets up every day at 5 a.m. My mom's the same way. She's always there with him, helping him out. And so I own fewer pairs of shoes than any woman I know, because I have to always be having something on that I could run out and haul some 2x4s around or something.
So definitely coming from a grassroots point of view. So as I try to read some of your posts, which I'll say it again, very detail-oriented posts about policy, environmental reports. It's actually not super easy reading. It's almost like scholarly reading, to be honest with you, Sarah. This is, my instinct is to blanket blame all the elected officials. But is that the right thing to do, Sarah? Who's on point on this and who is not?
I have to say that, okay, first of all, the state level is very messed up, and a lot of this demolition stuff is directly at the state level. We recently lost our governor, and let me tell you, with what I have discovered regarding the problems with greenwashing, essentially, of, you know, green energy credits given out for practices that aren't actually green, you know, kind of, if you tear down a good, solid building and build a new one, and you insert a certain number of, you know, green
solar
points.
Tubes.
Yeah, exactly. Then you're getting these green energy credits, and that's the kind of greenwashing that's going on right now. It's not true reuse. It's not true conservation. It's really environment ruining.
And it's nobody's real job to regulate that. Listeners, we do have a caller. The number is 503-231-8187. And have you watched a building get torn down on your block? I'd love to hear from you. And we do have a caller. BJ, what's going on, man?
Well, we're trying to survive with all this asbestos dust floating around in the air from the teardown down that street.
Where's that at? Where are you at with the asbestos?
North Portland in the urban renewal area, because the lots were reasonable, and there's a collusion between the builders and the building department. Because they want to split these lots up and make twice the money on taxation, because then the property tax doubles. See what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a money game, but it's more than that. And there's collusion with the contractor, Walsh Construction, RL, one after the other. They came in here from out of town originally, but, I mean, you can see it. They even tore down a school. They could have made it. I went to the meeting, a Bay Elementary, and they could have made it a trade school right on Willis. And it could have been rebuilt instead of turning into condos, which they couldn't get the rent from because they look good, but they want $1,500 a month or something. The average jobs aren't there for people. People don't have the work. You don't have, and they say, make jobs. Yeah, well, let the corporations put some of this money back in instead of sending it to China.
Hey, BJ, what do you think people should do? What should our listeners be doing? What are you doing?
Well, I'm an older person. It's typical for me. I'm coming on talking on you, and I say, really, we need to go down there to the building department to make consideration, make a statement about how you feel about zoning changes, because there are codes on this. At least there were in California when I lived there. You're not allowed to do that. You can't just tear down the whole of Vancouver and Albina and Williams and build these 6- and 8-story apartment buildings.
Yeah.
There were only 6 houses there on the basic lots. There were maybe 10 at the most, little places like mine. But on city lots, you know, 50 by 150 or 100 and something,
yeah,
or 60. And then what happens is when they tear them down, they build 6-story buildings with maybe 60 units in them.
Right. You know what happened on my block, BJ, is that there was a wonderful little tiny house. It was a tiny old house, and it was obviously an affordable house to live in, and it was on a double lot, and I believe it was Renaissance. We should probably not trash all the corporations, all the companies, like, too gratuitously, but Renaissance came in, pulled that down, and then put up 2, I'm going to just call them starter castles. They cut down all the trees, and they put up gigantic 2-story, probably 4-bedroom houses, and in each one, a retired couple lives. You know what I'm saying? So thanks a lot, BJ. You rock.
I'd be happier in the little house like I live in.
That's what I'm saying. Thanks a lot for calling, BJ. And this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. My name is Lisa, sitting in for Ani and Lynn. We're talking about Stop Demolishing Portland. The number to call, 503-231-8187. And we have another caller.
Well, good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having this show.
Uncle L.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. So my niece calls me. I own property there in Portland, and I've been interested in this all the time. And, you know, I've done some investments, and at one time I purchased a place with a partner. And, you know, we were going to, you know, tear it down, put up like a triplex and stuff. And, but as I got investigating it, I found a company that did, they called deconstruction. And so I had presumed that, and this is like in 2008, 2009, right in there, and I had presumed that deconstruction was, you know, they were really talking about it and promoting it as, like, you know, reusing, like, talking about those big old timbers, you know, old growth timbers and stuff. You know, a buddy of mine's a construction guy, and, like, when we were doing remodeling on some older places, he'd come over and he'd pick up these true 2x4s, you know, knotless fur. And I was wondering, whatever happened to that concept of deconstruction rather than demolition? And I can take my answer off the air.
Thanks.
Kind of working here. Okay.
Hey,
thank you.
Before you go, mm-hmm. though, do you have your property? Are you doing stuff with your property? What's your vision for what you're doing?
It's still, we never did get a triplex in. It's still a single family residence, about a third of an acre. And yeah, guys living there renting it, you know, every month.
Right. You know, I just want to ask you about this too. I think it's great to have all kinds of housing of all different sizes. And so there's some people who say tiny houses are wrong. No one should live in a tiny house. But then when I look at these big starter castles, I go, 2 people in a 4-bedroom. I never, ever, ever see anybody but the retired couples in those 2 houses. And I'm convinced that they probably moved here from California, sold their flat top house for $1 million in Gardena, and then bought this. You know what I'm saying? But then I'm looking at in Hollywood right now, Hollywood, California, there's like what they're calling a sweetheart cul-de-sac or something like that. It's a really old, tiny development of tiny houses, right? Like mm-hmm. a teeny tiny, it's almost like some of these places that you used to see here on of Highway 99. It's like the places that used to be little motels, right? Except that someone had turned this into housing and now that's going to be torn down too. So I just wanted to ask you, Uncle Al, because you're so cool and you did call, what do you think would be the best case? I mean, you know, if you had a magic wand and you could wave it over all the developers and City Hall and I guess, you know, Amanda Fritz, Commissioner Fritz, or whomever, what would you like to see that coming as someone who could potentially make that happen?
Gosh, you know, what I would like to see is, you know, I agree with this, you know, tiny house movement. I think it's wonderful. You know, 400 square foot, I think, is a little small. But, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, people, that's where they used to live, you know, 980 square foot little place, you know, condos, they're all over the place, you know, 750 square feet and stuff. But I don't know if there's any sort of magic panacea, you know, that can kind of drape over it all. But, you know, increased lot lines, the volume of air, you know, that you have to heat, you know, in one of these huge houses. I mean, just think of the energy costs. And so I think if you have a gradient, you know, like down here, you know, lower, smaller, you know, and you have rates that keep that affordable for, you know, 50% of the people, you know, down below the median. And then as you get larger and bigger construction, all those costs, you know, levy higher taxes, you know, on the size of the, not just the property, you know, square foot, but like the size of the place, you know, because they're using resources, you know, to heat like a 3,500 square foot home versus like a 950 square foot home, you know, given the same, you know, sort of roofing and insulation and stuff. I mean, yikes, just, in and of itself, it requires a lot of money.
Cool. You know, it's funny what you said that, and we are going to go on to another caller, but what you just said, taxing uh-huh. the size of the building. If you've ever been to Amsterdam and if you've been to the old quarter, you know, the canal quarter, you see those old stone buildings, the old Amsterdam buildings uh-huh. along the canal. Some of them are double wide, some of them are triple wide, and some of them are really thin. And it's because when they were built, they were taxed based on the width and the size. So from your for mouth sure. to God's ear, Uncle L, thanks for calling.
I will throw in the Amanda Fritz's work. Working on changing that. She wants it scaled.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. That's why I was asking about that before. So, but yeah, thanks for calling, Uncle Al. I wanted to ask you about, like, who are some of our heroes or sheroes that we should be trying to support. Let's go to the next caller, though, and see if we can get some more callers in. Mitch, what's going on, Mitch?
Well, I'd like to know what's going on in KBOO's neighborhood, because I'm used to changing buses over there by Burnside and 11th, and there's that huge condo on the corner, and the old icon of the neighborhood, the old Wives Tale restaurant, I was shocked to see it close after so many years, shocked to see that nobody in the neighborhood seemed to care. And the last time I took the bus down Burnside past that corner, the entire building was gone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what is the economics driving that?
Thanks for calling, Mitch. And it is my understanding, and I could be mistaken, that the women that owned Old Wives' Tales just wanted to retire. That is my understanding. But
how did the building come to vaporize?
I don't know.
I'll tell you why. It's because Dennis Sackhoff bought it. I'm pretty sure it was Dennis Sackhoff. He's the guy with Urban Development Group, UDG, I think. Okay. And he just tears down everything. Same with the Rimmers. That's who he works with. That's Vic Rimmers, who is Everett Custom Homes. They rack up more violationable, finable things than anybody else in the city. And of course, nobody ever actually turns up in time to inspect and give them a violation.
Well, but even if they did, it's just the cost of doing business. Do you know what
right.
I'm saying? And, but what I think Mitch is asking is, who's in charge of, we have urban planning in Portland, theoretically. Is this where you're going, Mitch? Theoretically, we've got urban planning. So
no,
theoretically, somebody made a decision for what the heck that intersection's supposed to be like. I mean, am I imagining that?
I'm curious as to whether the owners of Old Wives' Tale own the land under that corner, and if so, who was it sold to for what purpose?
Mitch, I want to tell you something, and this is wild, okay? There's a website. Have you got a pen or a pencil or something?
Yeah, sure.
It's called PortlandMaps.com.
Let's skip Portland Maps. Let's go straight to PortlandChronicle.com. That is an active
The Portland
site.
Chronicle is the best new news outlet in the whole region. It is awesome. Portland Chronicle. And it's a web blog that's only about development. And I want to hug Portland Chronicle. I wish that it had a name that said development so that I could remember it. I forget the name sometimes. But what I was saying, though, PortlandMaps.com. You go to that page, and it just has one field. You type in an address, right? It pulls up the paperwork of that address. If you go there and you type in whatever was Old Wives' Tale's address, and I can't remember, but you should be able to figure it out by looking online.
Probably cached online.
I'm sure it is also still on Yelp, even though it's been closed. You go to Portland Maps, you plug that in, and when you pull up the papers, look at the top and click the tab that says Assessor, I believe it's assessor,
right.
Assessor, and that will, if you look in there, it tells you who owns the property, right? And I don't know how, if someone just bought it, I'm not sure how that's reflected, but that's how to tell that. And I'm going to cut you loose, Mitch, because there's another caller, and I really appreciate your call, though, because, you know, Sarah, that's the thing that gets me. I chance upon these street corners where I see stuff that is just so torn apart, and I ask myself, don't we have urban planning? Aren't we famous for that? And is it somebody's job to make sure that this doesn't look like a forest of...
It is terrifying me that people are trying to emulate urban planning. My little hometown, which is Aberdeen, Washington, that I grew up in until in still young childhood we moved, that little place is so devastated. And I just think of all the, you know, as the gentrification happens, well, what's actually happening is like little tiny pinpoints are getting so, you know, like the center of the city is getting so expensive, squeezing everyone out, whoever used to live here. And large swaths of areas are just still degrading. Nobody's taking care of them. And now I'm concerned, I'm hearing stories of renters are rushing to St. Helens, Oregon, for example, and taking up all the affordable rentals there because they've been pushed out of Portland. And so they're, you know, they rush to the next place they can possibly find a place. That's St. Helens. They end up pushing out people who are in St. Helens. This is such a terrible thing with such reverberating consequences. We do have planning. They believe that we should just put up with the density that we're supposed to. They really, really want us to just, you know, chin up and everything is going to be fine. It's, you know, as soon as
who is the they here?
The Bureau of Planning and Sustainability.
And that's the City of Portland Bureau of Planning and Sustainability.
Yes, and you know, I have to say something good for them, okay? They've been wonderful to work with, okay? They do understand that things have gone horribly awry. Some of them haven't got quite to that point yet. And unfortunately, sometimes there's things that were signed off on by city council. And currently when it's the law, they can't do anything about it. It's kind of like when I call those guys for inspections and they say, I can't come inspect because this, you know, there's always a reason. Well, in this case, we're still stuck with what we had before. We're trying to change it as quickly as possible. The mayor wants to fund this new thing whereby we will be able to use old codes we haven't had since 1959. In 1959, Portland outlawed being able to internally divide old houses. But you know, there's a bunch of huge old houses that could be turned into duplex, triplex, even a quadplex within a single house. And it would be wonderful, you know, many people sharing. And again, this comes back to construction costs. Construction costs way too much for new construction to be affordable. That means you want to take existing buildings and make the best use of them you possibly can.
And the ones that we have are made out of old growth timber. We've said it again, some of the best building materials known to humankind, and they're not really making a lot of new old growth timber. So this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. My name is Lisa. I'm sitting in for Lynn and Ani. We're talking about Stop Demolishing Portland. We've got a caller. Is it Barbara?
Yes.
Yay! What's going on, Barbara?
Well, I'm a 60-year-old native of Portland, and I lived in Southeast my entire life. As they're infilling, as we courteously say. Excuse me. The fact is, we had a large piece of property on which 16-house cul-de-sac was placed that abutted our park. And it's, you know, while they're throwing thousands of more people into our neighborhood, and I do mean thousands because you can't drive anywhere. I mean, next to me, they took down one house, put up four, charged $350 for each one. I live on 63rd off of Duke, this area, and even the area over by Woodstock Grade School, over on 52nd, past Woodstock going towards Steele. Things are being, houses knocked down continually. And I don't understand why there is no more open space allowed. We are building out to the curb and up to the sky. I was given a notice from the building, the sustainability, the people of which you spoke, for the government here for housing development, And they said in my neighborhood they now want to change it to 5,000 square feet for one home. And it's sort of like the timber industry when they saw the new regulations going. I cannot believe the speed.
Barbara,
and the
can I ask you a real quick question? Are you in Eastmoreland, and is your house currently a 7,000 square foot lot?
No, I have an 8,000 square foot lot. I'm up next to Felony Flats.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I'm up on 63rd off of Duke, and so. Yeah, but the neighbors, you know, they were able to get a special dispensation, and they didn't even need the 30-foot front that was the law. Since they were crossing over driveways, they allowed them to put four houses on a 100-foot front, and so at 25 feet. The radiant heat from a fire is going to set the other homes on fire. Watching the news one morning, I saw them. Say, oh, five houses in this neighborhood caught fire. And the other lady who at the desk said, oh, yeah, that's in that new neighborhood where they're building everything real close. But the next half an hour, that statement had been scrubbed.
Wow.
So I think we just, as I say, I'm going to work and have worked with some of my neighbors. We tried to stop the four houses that went in on the one lot. But it's something's going on. They know that they'd like to change to a 5,000 square foot lot. Yeah, I grew up and I grew up in Eastmoreland when it was more of a working class neighborhood, and I just can't believe what they've done to this city.
Hey, Barbara,
I
want to thank you for your comments. And something that you've brought up a whole bunch of things that we've already been talking about and ringing some of these bells about, like, people, the developers are throwing up buildings that are going to put other people in shadow forever, you know, as long as that building is there. But one of the things that gets me that you mentioned is basically what you're talking about is when the gentrification hits Lentz, okay, which is traditionally... gentrification, it's like a slide ruler. And one of the things that one of my coworkers named Donovan Smith has been talking to me about over the past few weeks is he's done some reporting on Gresham and interviewing a law enforcement official in Gresham who's basically saying, you know, we just have all these people of color here all the time. I don't know what that's about. I don't know where they came from. It's as if some of these city officials in Gresham literally don't understand what their role is and how people are being displaced. And so Donovan asked the rhetorical question, what's going to happen when Gresham gentrifies? Where will the people who lived in Lentz move to when Lentz gentrifies? Are we going to end up in Aberdeen, Washington? I guess. But
I'm beginning to have to look. My property taxes, even though they say they can only assess at 3%, was 26% higher than last year.
How is that possible?
Well, I called them and they said, well, it's all those people who vote for things and then just put it on the property tax.
All the bond measures and everything like that.
That's
okay.
What they said, but it's like, I'm a native and I feel like I'm 60 and I'm going to just get forced out.
Yeah.
Because I can no longer afford it. And plus, quite frankly, the livability, and speaking of the police, I've spoken to the police in my neighborhood And they're saying, yeah, we're having a lot more problems.
Yeah, they are.
As they smash the people in. And, you know, how about some PSAs about how to be a good neighbor? People don't seem to think that, you know,
that's
everybody
a really good idea.
Turns their stereo way up loud. And I like loud music, too, but I go in my house and shut my doors and windows so I don't impose it upon my neighbors. There's just some livability issues, you
Thanks.
Know?
So, Barbara, I gotta grab
Thank
the
much.
Phone back. Barbara is a wise woman, and she rang a lot of bells for us. And we do have another caller. This is Positively...
Thank you
for calling. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. We're talking about Stop Demolishing Portland. This is such a hot button because there's something about housing. There's something about our communities that's actually very emotional. But our emotions, it's like we get upset. We start chucking rocks against the side of a barn, and the people inside City Hall are kind of looking scared, and they're like, no, we can only do policy. What do you think, Sarah? I mean,
well,
where does it come together?
I know that our built environment is very important. Like, psychologically, we have these, we rely on these things, seeing beloved landmarks from our youth vanish is a very hard thing. And we do need to consider that the only native of Portland currently in City Hall is Dan Saltzman. Everybody else, and he's in charge of the Housing Bureau, and everybody else is came here in adulthood. And that none of this means anything to them. They didn't grow up looking at something, seeing generations of people pass by. And so it never... This needs more exploration, basically, because we know that there are deep psychological effects. Like, children scream and cry when a building down the block starts getting torn down, and they're pleading with their parents asking, why are they tearing that house down? You know, we know these things, yet we dismiss them. But it is an issue, right, along with the rest of these things.
Here's something that Mitch brought up. I forgot to sketch out that I do think is really important. Was it Mitch? No. It was Uncle L, who basically said, what about the deconstruction companies that people advertise themselves as deconstruction companies? I know that there have been some in the past that really did do that. But as we watched that one church get torn down there in Northeast just a couple weeks ago, I spoke with that crew. You spoke with that crew. A bunch of us spoke with that crew. It's not that they were bad people or anything, but they just tore the heck out of that building, and it had beautiful... windows in an unusual shape, and the construction guy said, yeah, but the glass is cracked. And people said to me, no, it's about the window sill, you fool. You know, it's like they literally don't know what they're doing. So in other words, the deconstruction, some of these people in this industry are literally going after like a gold rush, and they're running out there and learning half of what they could, would, or should know, but they're just trying to, people don't have a job. And so that's why people are glomming onto that as something that they could make money on too. And if we're not even talking about capitalism. I mean, if capitalism really were a valid theory, wouldn't everybody have a place to live? You know, I just said that. Anyway, I'm Lisa. This is Positively Revolting. Of course, the number to call is 503-231-8187. We have a couple callers.
Hello?
Hello, caller. You're on the line.
Hello.
Harry, how's it going, man?
Oh, hey, yeah. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, is it true that there are over 500 demolitions in Portland every year?
It's about 400 this year, but when you consider that a lot of these were almost complete teardowns, they left nothing but the slab, and called that a remodel, there's actually more than that. So you could be right. It's just really, really hard to count all the remodels.
Yeah, and... the issue I have is why the city of Portland, there's a lot of houses that are on the historical register, yet they're being torn
Thank
down.
You. Thank
What's
you.
The idea of being on the historical register if you can't preserve them?
Quite honestly, this all
Great
goes back
question.
To,
Great this, question. Thanks for asking it.
This goes back to Oregon state law. At least that's what we are told. I am not a legal expert, and I haven't checked with an attorney. But they keep telling us that they can't do anything. It's state law from the 90s when the Republicans were in charge or something, and made all, you know, the regressive tax laws and the things having to do with, really, you know, making it so we can even have inclusionary zoning. I guess that became law in 1999. It was a bad stretch of the 90s headed by Bill Sizemore, where there was all these different measures that passed, and now you can, you know, there's no protection, no protection for any of our historic icons.
Because, and this came up with, again, with that church that was torn down a couple weeks ago, that that thing was on the historic register, but the developer from Lake Oswego who had purchased it was able to just yank it off the register, it seemed like, immediately.
Yes, you can take it off the register and get your demolition permit the same day.
Yeah, that's what he did. And that's one of the biggest questions, Harry, in my opinion. Thanks for asking it.
Okay, one last thing. Right on. Are there any other, are you planning any ballot measures to force the city to control the demolition?
Yes, we have several things going on. One is SB 705 is working its way through the state legislature right now. That is to force asbestos surveys before demolition because, as I said earlier, you have to abate if you know they're there, but you don't have to check if they're there.
Boing, 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 boing.
Sorry.
Sorry.
And then we are working with the mayor's office and Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to reduce the height setback massing. You know, people have built these giant lot covering monster houses because it's been the same price no matter how big you build. And so they would maximize it. They would maximize it to its possible max. And obviously that is not sustainable. It does not help us conserve affordable housing because of course they will snatch up the cheapest houses, and they have. None of the cheapest houses that were livable are exist anymore. They are all gone.
By they, and that they is developers, I think.
Yes. And so, or investors, I guess we should say. And so they will tear down the affordable house, build some monster. It raises prices in local rents. It raises prices for, you know, the home selling prices. Everybody eventually gets priced out. I've been priced out. I can't think of anybody who can even hardly afford to live here anymore in the lifestyle that we enjoyed, I guess, 10 years ago. And there would be lots of transplants who just got here who'd say, we don't deserve to. But I disagree.
In the style, we're just talking about being able to go to the grocery store, you know, being able to put, you know, go to the park. It's like, and that goes to something that Barbara said, you know, what about overall livability? I started talking to my husband about just totally moving away. It's like, has there been a traffic jam on Martin Luther King Boulevard for 10 years? Am I imagining that? Right. First, it was the streetcar. I'm not against the streetcar. Now it's some other big, I almost said an obscenity, another big building. And it's like, can you get somewhere? And it doesn't matter if you're on a bus or in a car or on a bike. It's like when there's so many more people on the road. And I recognize that a lot of people want to live in Portland. And it's like, everybody move over here and make it the place that you thought you were moving to, but it's not anymore. But, you know, the livability issue is real. And that's why I'm surprised that more people on the city council specifically aren't really just speaking out about it. But maybe they are, and I just haven't heard them.
Unfortunately, they're not really. We have had effective advocacy from the mayor. I do want to mention, you said MLK, and that triggered something for me. So I live in Elliott, old Albina, the historic Black neighborhood. And there are so many empty lots, neglected, nothing's built. You know, there used to be a building there, probably even people lived in it, and it's gone now. And that, you know, that reduces our overall density. The southern edge of Elliott is Northeast Broadway. If you look at Northeast Broadway as you approach the Broadway Bridge from Northeast, you're passing gas stations with large parking lots. You're passing a Kia dealership with large amounts of new cars parked on gravel. Does that really say Portland to you? Why? And so how are we justifying tearing down a gorgeous historic house at 51st and Division by saying that's close in? You know, a gorgeous historic house with that, I guess until recently, a lot of roommates were sharing. You know that was affordable, and you know that they're not going to be able to find that deal anymore. And two huge trees, which are stormwater absorbent.
We haven't brought up the trees.
Clean the air. Yes, and in fact, I want to drop a bombshell, if it's okay.
As long as it doesn't have any dirty words in it.
It doesn't have any dirty words in it. So I have had an epic land use case, and I came in here with a file about an inch thick if I needed to refer to anything. I'm actually going through my unprecedented second land use case. They never do this. I don't know what happened. They won't tell me. So I discovered in the course of it that because my landlord didn't tell me he was going to cut down all these huge tall trees. Like one of them is a 90-year-old, 90-foot tall walnut tree with huge branches going every which way. We are near an industrial zone. All those millions of leaves clean the air, You know, it's the trees are so important. And so I discovered that he falsified, among other things, he falsified his arborist report, and he falsified what's called a soil infiltration test. Mm-hmm. And that is where you pour water on the ground to see how quickly it goes down. And he simply, like, I watched it be done, but I didn't understand what I was seeing until many, many months later when I looked up the requirements and found out he'd done it completely wrong. And there's a strong implication there, because I took it to the right people. I alerted them as soon as I found out what had happened. I was like, this is a big emergency, guys. This is going to be bad. It's going to hurt the sewers here, because they were
that, you know, one gigantic tree just even. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so there's going to be lots of stormwater pouring out of here. There's no way this is going to work. Nobody cared. I couldn't figure out why I couldn't get anyone to respond to me. Eventually, finally, I kind of went, you know, semi-public with it on the Stop Demolishing Portland forum, and I got the feedback that yeah, they kind of fudge these things and it's okay. So our infrastructure cannot handle this development. It cannot handle
it. And the infrastructure is what we're talking about. And the other thing about that is, I know from being a reporter that if there is what's called a heritage tree in your zone, on your yard, if you even so much as cut one branch out of it, you are in trouble as a homeowner. And we've seen people brought before the city council and humiliated because they were being prosecuted because they cut big trees down on the property that they own. And that's the part that gets me. Like, how do these developers do that? I know some people last year who tried to do sit-ins around trees in their neighborhood and they failed. They couldn't save these trees. And a friend of mine, Kurumi Sakura Conley, who's a brilliant artist, by the way, and she's married to a brilliant artist, she's taken pictures and posted on the Stop Demolishing Portland of before and after some of these beautiful trees that look like the design on placenta when a child is born. And I know that's an obscure reference, but this is literally a tree of life thing. It's not a joke that trees actually save lives, and they help our infrastructure. Anyway, we've got a bit of show left. It's positively revolting. I'm Lisa. I'm sitting in for Lynn and Ani. We're talking about Stop Demolishing Portland. We're here with this incredibly edgy grassroots community organizer. I mean, for real. You have to go, well, no, I'm not going to urge people to go to Facebook because I just don't feel comfortable social media-ing people. But if you were curious,
I urge you to tear down Everett Custom Home signs.
All righty then. And we have a couple callers. Let's go back to the phone lines.
Hello.
George is on the phone. George, what's going on?
Well, I wanted to call and tell your audience about the Lake Oswego Preservation Society. I don't live in Lake Oswego myself, but I grew up there in the 40s and 50s, so I have some sort of an allegiance. But anyway, at their website, Lake Oswego Preservation Society, they have a video about the history of Lake Oswego, and they also have a video of the advantages of preserving old homes instead of tearing them down, you know, remodel them, which is much more efficient and way less expensive. And you keep, you know, you want to keep the same footprint. And I thought that the Lake Oswego Preservation Society could be a model for other neighborhoods. And I think it just surfaced as sort of a grassroots situation, and I do believe they've been rather successful at preserving some of the old homes around Lake Oswego.
Yes, they've pushed.
Thanks, George.
They've pushed a case for an 1850s home all the way to the Oregon Supreme Court, which is the first time this has happened. So that's really exciting.
Ironically, some of the
old growth wood.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
So much superior.
And they're not making it anymore.
We're getting now. And a 2x4 is actually a 2x4. And you can almost bend a nail trying to hammer one into the old growth wood.
Thanks for calling, George. We're going to cut you loose because we're running out of show and we want to get to the second caller. And I do want to say, ironically, some of the worst developers are coming from Lake Oswego. Go ahead.
Oh, including mine, Guy Bryant. Yeah. Awful developer. I have photos of his construction, and I want to respond to something George said while he was on the line real quick, because it's really important. It's like, the question is, why can't we do this more? There's an incredibly strong push out there to just build more units, build more units. And you need to understand that
because there's money in it.
There's a very low skill level. Like, I know how to remodel because I grew up doing it, but I can tell you for sure that Vic Rimmers and his dad Wally Rimmers don't. They do what are they called? Basically house in a box. And so that's why they have to completely demolish, because it's the cheapest. They get to reuse the sewer connection. They get some sort of credit, well, somebody does, for taking it to the biomass burner, which is lovely. And then they build this exact same house in every spot that they work, and it's fast. That's the only reason they're doing it, because it's fast. If they had to remodel and renovate properly, it would take a long time, even though it is cheaper and definitely the better ecological choice.
For citizens it is, but if you're in there and you want to make money doing development, then the
you
vomit
have to
box.
Raise and build.
Let's just call it the vomit box. You just vomit it up. Okay, right on. We do have another caller. Do you think we could make it to the other caller? Ross, what's going on?
Hi.
What's
up? Well, I'm just trying to save the neighborhood just like you are. One of the things in gentrification that I'm seeing is that the old landmark places are sort of under attack if they don't fit into a plan. And one of them is at the corner of Fremont and Mississippi.
The Sons of Haiti Lodge.
The Sons of Haiti Lodge, yes. And
the last black-owned property on that part of Mississippi.
Yes, it's such a it's been such a service to the community and continues to be. There's just a wonderful Taekwondo class that meets there, and world-class organization. At any rate, the thing that's so interesting now is that as the building is, you might say, has been under attack by the city. With all kinds of
taxes,
fines requiring them to, for example, they have a perfectly adequate Crush Rock parking lot that they have two food carts on, and the city is requiring them to pave that place and put in a an expensive.
It's outrageous. It is racism. Okay, racism is definitely still with us, especially when the city's planning has intentionally drawn in a lot of white people from the Midwest.
There also there was a hillside of perfectly good sod, and they're requiring that it be torn apart and put in a new kind of nursery-based ground cover. And there was previously they had put in blueberries and edible forest kinds of things, and that wasn't allowed. At any rate, they're having a petition. Effort with a group called Green in the Hood and the Friends of the Corner. So if people stop by there, they might pay attention. This is all done under like the Office of Development Services and the people mm-hmm. who deal with complaints about properties.
Cool,
so it's
Ross.
Not under planning and sustainability.
Okay, Ross, I gotta grab the show back. We've only got
right.
like 3 minutes left. That
Bless
was strategic
you.
And awesome, and thank you. He's saying Green in the Hood and Friends of the Corner to save the Sons of Haiti Lodge. Shall we try to get one last caller? Is there one more caller? Let's try to go for that last caller. Where, are you there, hon?
Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
Sunset Magazine said it was Paris in the 20s, New York City in the 50s, and now it's Portland.
For real. Thank you.
That's our large marketing budget, apparently.
Thank you. So thanks for calling. And so we got to close out this segment, Ms. Sarah Long. What do you think that we've been talking about? Stop demolishing Portland. We've been talking about gentrification. We've been talking about livability. We've been talking about safe homes for our kids, how to make our kids even feel safe in our neighborhoods. We've been talking about the trees, the environment, the policy. What should people be doing, Sarah?
You should be writing to City Hall and letting them know that you really oppose what's going on and you really want to see change, and you know that some of them are coming up for re-election. and that there's some pretty strong challengers now. If you are, like I have been working with the mayor's office, and I'm pleased, but there's many people who just feel he could do more and is not, and there's a strong challenger now with Ted Wheeler. And then there's Nicholas Caleb, who is challenging Steve Novick. And I think since Steve Novick has been the biggest enemy of truly, you know, keeping our neighborhoods affordable by trying to limit the destruction, I have no problem supporting Nicholas Caleb over Steve Novick. So,
do you have a website? Do you have a source of information for people to go?
Unfortunately, I don't. I would refer you to the Facebook forum. Just come on in and ask questions. I mean, everybody's new, but again, you know, I don't want to.
And that's Stop Demolishing Portland. What about that wonderful website though? The PortlandChronicle.com.
That will give you a lot of data on the demolitions and keep you informed and updated with what is being destroyed in our neighborhoods.
PortlandChronicle.com. I have to say, that is the coolest new news source I've seen anywhere. And I just think it's awesome. And anything else, Sarah? Like, what do you think are next steps? We've got like 1 minute left.
Next steps are going to be, we're going to keep plowing away at this extremely slow to change law wheel, and we will eventually get some new code put in, which is great, but we just have to push and push and push, because we are talking about the slowest wheel, and these things are very, very important.
Right on. That's it for our show. Thanks to our guest, Sarah Long. Stop Demolishing Portland. PortlandChronicle.com. Check it out. Special thanks to engineer Kristen Weigert. Yay! This show will be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
And it is almost a minute past 9 a.m., and you do have it tuned to KBOO Portland, and coming right up is going to be One Land, Many Voices with host Zaha Hassan.